you know, your site, my site, we're not afraid to show the red, white, and blue.
Right.
We may disagree about what our country is doing from time to time, but that doesn't change our love of country. And we got another hour to go, folks. Guy's going to interview me on many of these same topics, or really anywhere he wants to go. So if you're on the Head On Radio Network, stick around for the Guy James Show, where I'm going to be his honored guest. And don't forget to check out both our websites, whether you're a regular Guy James listener or Inside Scoop listener, RadioInsideScoop.com, www.theguyjamesshow.com. Stick around. We've got one more hour to go. We'll be right back after the news break.
CEO job
performance. Hello?
In Birmingham, England, 9 people were arrested in an alleged kidnapping plot. It involved the torture and beheading of a British Muslim soldier. Afterwards, the killing would be broadcast over the internet. For the second day, members of the Iraq Study Group appeared before a congressional hearing. Co-chair former Representative Lee Hamilton said the training of the Iraqi police force has been botched. He said the wrong agencies were assigned the task. In Iraq today, the U.S. military said an American soldier was killed in combat. The death brings this month's death toll to 85. Also in Iraq, in mostly Shiite neighborhoods today, bombs and mortars killed at least 12 people at several locations. An apparent retaliatory attack on a Sunni neighborhood killed 4 people. U.S. officials report possible Iranian links to the recent attack at a Karbala compound that killed 5 U.S. soldiers. One was killed at the site. 4 others were abducted and later found dead. NATO reports that in southern Afghanistan today, around 30 militants were killed in fighting against Afghan and NATO forces. CNN reports that Osama bin Laden's brother-in-law and former best friend was killed in Madagascar while on a business trip. The family did not give details but said his possessions had been stolen. Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez said today he will give the Senate Judiciary Committee secret documents with details of the government's controversial domestic spying program. The announcement today ends a 2-week standoff with Congress. In the perjury trial of former Vice Presidential Chief of Staff Louis Scooter Libby today, former Time Magazine reporter Matt Cooper is expected to testify. There are as many as 5 different non-binding resolutions among lawmakers who are critical of President Bush's 21,000 troop surge in Iraq. In an effort to control Republican opposition, President Bush will meet with GOP senators on Friday at the White House. Democratic Senator Joe Biden of Delaware officially opened his 2008 presidential campaign today by filing papers with the Federal Election Commission. He has already made some controversial remarks about his Democratic rivals and their ideas. Author Sidney Shelton died yesterday at the age of 89. He was a prolific writer, and several of his novels became television mini-series. You are listening to the Quality News Network. Science and business news are coming up next.
Here's good news about your money. Monterey County Bank has won the Bauer Financial 5-Star Superior Rating for financial strength and stability, making it one of the safest banks in Monterey County for your money. It's nice to know your money is in a safe place, but there are even more reasons to bank with Monterey County Bank. They now have 4 convenient locations in Carmel, Monterey, Carmel Valley, and Pacific Grove. And Monterey County Bank is the oldest locally owned bank, now celebrating its 30th anniversary serving you. Here's another important point. Local businesses have come to trust and rely on Monterey County Bank's position as the county's number one SBA small business lender. Safety, convenience, and local people you can trust. That's Monterey County Bank. Stop in at one of our 4 branches and find out why you can bank on us. Monterey County Bank, SBA preferred lender and equal housing lender, member FDIC.
The U.S. Census Bureau will go high-tech for the 2010 count. Temporary workers will use handheld computers to make the count more accurate and precise. About 500,000 workers will participate. Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez continues to increase his power to transform the country into a socialist society. Today, the Congress granted him authority to put sweeping measures into place by decree. The Commerce Department reports in the fourth quarter the U.S. economy grew at a 3.5% rate. That is more than economists had expected. Altria Group announced in late March it will sell off its majority stake in Kraft Foods as part of a restructuring plan. Advertising for this Sunday's Super Bowl is expected to run $2.6 billion for a 30-second ad, the highest rate ever. The NYSE Group, the corporate parent of the New York Stock Exchange, has agreed to enter a strategic alliance with the Tokyo Stock Exchange. The joint pairing would include shared listings and the trade of technology and marketing. The Federal Reserve has left the benchmark interest rate at its current mark, 5.25%. Light sweet crude has been trading above $58 a barrel today. Currently, it's at $58.07 on the New York Mercantile Exchange. And taking a look at Wall Street this hour, the Dow is up 114 points at 12,637. NASDAQ up 15, S&P 500 up 10. There's more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Allie Dramoff.
Guy James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life, you hear me? Give my creation life.
So this was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Get dropped out. Six. Five, four, three, two, one.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you read?
The Guy James Show. America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Ah, you bet. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Guy James Show. So glad to have all of you along with us this afternoon. My goodness, a good audience in store here. I can tell that already. You look like a lively bunch to me, and we've been getting lots of email messages so far, so that's a good thing. And as I mentioned yesterday, I'm Guy James, and you're not. We have to respond to Mr. Cheney on that. Hey, today's going to be a special show, and I encourage you to give us a call, 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. I do hope you'll give us a call and join in on the program. I like that when you do that. And so does our guest today. If you listened to Mark Levine's show today, you know that I was on with him for his show, and he's going to be on along with me for the first hour of our show today. And I'm excited about that, and I hope we've got our tech issue worked out here. Mark, are you with us?
I am with you.
I thought so. All right. Glad to have you along with us today. We're doing a little cross promotion here on the Head On Radio Network, and I want to brag a minute, and I know Mark could do the same thing. I'm very proud of the guests and the people we have here on the Head On Radio Network. We've got a great lineup. starting Monday, we've got Joe Vecchio on in the morning, and then from 1 to 11 to 2 p.m. every day now, Jeff Allen Wolf. And by the way, Jeff's going to be with us a little while. Isn't that right, Mark?
Yes, he is. He's going to call in the next break.
Great. And then we've got Mark Levine from 2 to 3. That's not Mark Levin now. Totally different animal.
We can talk about that.
Oh, we can, and I think we probably will. Mark, welcome to the show. It's good to have. And, of course, we got Bob Kincaid from 6 to 9 and Dr. Bill O'Brien on Mondays and Fridays from 3 to 5. And we've got Foxed Up from 5 to 6 every day. And then Bob Kincaid wrapping it up from 6 to 9 every day. So we got a good lineup. And we've got good professional hosts on the show. They're knowledgeable. They're well-spoken. And I'm proud to be associated with this group. And I met Mark a couple of times in Washington before. But last week we had a chance to sit down, have dinner, and chew the fat, as it were. That's I don't know if he uses that.
I had fat on my meat. I forget.
Mine was awfully lean. I got to tell you a little story. Mark's not all that big of a guy, and we sat down in this nice dining room and ordered dinner. And the first thing out of his mouth to the server was I think I'll get that Cornish hen with the stuffed rice, but is there a lot of it? I'm really hungry.
You're telling on me now.
Yeah, and so I ordered these pork medallions, which were fabulous, by the way, and I say that as an old farm boy. But Mark, I looked over, and that Cornish hen and the rice was gone. He could have eaten three of those, I think. So
I think I could have. It was very good.
You fooled me. But anyway, thank you for a great dinner. We had great conversation, and that's what spawned this whole thing today. We thought, you know, we got to get together and cross promote, and I'm sure we could have a great conversation on the radio. So welcome to the show, Mark. Whatever happens here, I won't be responsible for. So you were a gentleman on my show. I on your show, I'm not so sure the same thing will happen here.
Oh, you go for it. I can take
it. Well, I like the fact that you're in Washington, and I don't make any secret of the fact that I do love that town, and I like the fact that I get to be there once in a while and get my finger on the pulse and see what goes on and meet with a few of the hobnob with some of the people. I enjoy that. There's no question about it. I do. I had a chance last Tuesday and Wednesday morning, both actually, to meet with quite a few of our Democratic politicians, and I had a hard time getting some straight talk out of them on a couple of issues. And number one, they didn't want to talk about the oil contracts. You had an Antonia Yuhas on your program as well.
She was terrific,
wasn't she? Though, and she talked about the oil contracts that we've got over there, and I could not get a single Democratic United States Senator to talk about that in any detail whatsoever. What do you think about that whole situation?
Well, it's interesting that you haven't gotten them to talk. I'd be curious to know what they've told you. Democrats are kind of strange on oil. I mean, you find, at least in the House, very strong opposition to oil companies. Of course, there's one of the six elements of the first 100 hours was to cut the subsidies that were going to oil companies apart from the energy bill. And one of the really terrific things that Nancy Pelosi has done just this, maybe 2 weeks old now, is she's been undercutting a Congressman Dingell out of Michigan, who you may like on his views on a number of issues, but on oil, I think he's dead wrong. He seems to be in the pocket of the oil companies almost as much as the Republicans. He is out of Detroit, and of course there is a very important car industry there. But she undercut him. She did set up a new commission on global warming that will also deal with energy issues. And I actually think she did a very clever move, because she can be the bad guy, if you will, and then Dingell can say to his people, hey, well, I couldn't help it. She went around me. But at least in the House, I do see Democrats taking stronger stands against the oil industry. I'm really sorry to hear what you're telling me about the Senate, though, and I'm curious to know what they told you.
Well, they were literally mum. They gave me the political mumbo-jumbo, turned it around on you when they don't want to ask a question, and I asked the question twice and still couldn't get an answer about these production sharing agreements that are going on with Iraq. They just don't want to talk about it. And
a couple, they don't know, or do you think that they're? I mean, who was it specifically? Do you remember?
Well, we had Dorgan, we had Carl Levin, we had Debbie Stabenow. Didn't get a chance to ask Ted Kennedy that. Leahy.
Leahy, I would think, would be very good on this, and Ted Kennedy too.
They just didn't want to talk about it. And I honestly feel that at least two of them, and I won't embarrass them, but I do believe that two of them didn't know what I was talking about when I was talking about
it. Well, I think that's probably what it was. I think they didn't know what you were talking about. We may have more information sometimes than they do. You know, we have this idea that everyone in Washington knows everything that's going on. It's simply not the case. I mean, when I went into talk radio 3 years ago and did stories on Homeland Security, And the way we were actually trying to protect Homeland Security, and the Bush administration was starting to veto the bill, there were members of Congress that didn't know that happened. We don't, unfortunately, even those of us who've worked on the Hill, we don't pass around information, even among our fellow Democrats, as much as we should. And sometimes the right hand really doesn't know what the left hand is doing, I'm sorry to say.
I think a lot of the constituency out here would find that absolutely shocking. If I knew that some of those senators didn't know about the production sharing agreements, it would disappoint me very, very much. And you know, you brought up an important point, Mark, that I've been hammering away on our show for a while. Don't think that just because you're Joe Smith lunch bucket guy out here and Sally going to work every day and paying your taxes and paying your bills and being an American, don't think that we have elected a bunch of people who are princes and kings and queens who are a lot more intelligent than we are, that are better people. That is simply not the case. In many cases, and I think you're absolutely right, in many cases, those of us, at least the listeners, like on our network here, who I consider to be very well informed, in many cases, we are better informed than they are.
I'll give you an example. Sylvester Reyes, the new head of the Intelligence Committee, he was asked whether something about whether Al-Qaeda was Shiite or Sunni, and he said Shiite. He didn't even know that Al-Qaeda is Sunni and, you know, Maqtada al-Sadr and some of the Iranian terrorists are Shiite. He didn't know that basic information. Now, I don't mean to just pick on the Democrats. There are Republicans, I guarantee you, who don't know this either. But you should never assume your elected representative is more intelligent than you or more informed than you. I can assure you many of them, maybe even most of them, aren't. And that's one of the reasons why you got to call them and inform them about things that they may not know about.
Hey, our so-called president didn't know about the difference between Sunni and Shia and that they had a long-standing feud either.
Yeah, well, he also didn't know who was running Pakistan when he was running for election.
So true. Hey, in a minute, I don't think I'll do it before the break. It'll be too long to talk about, but I do want to talk about some of the other talk show hosts here in a little while and get your opinion on them.
Okay.
That's what we do, so it's interesting to us, and we did talk about it at our dinner the other night. But it is interesting, the talk radio world, and probably the reason you and I are here together is because of the talk radio world. That's where we first met. I think you were at that Take Back America conference was it, June? Yeah.
Yes. That's how I started on the Head On Radio Network, in fact. I had been on the air. Actually, I was the highest-ranked program on the liberal station KLSD in San Diego, and Air America literally bought me out. It just shows you part of the problems with their business model. They were throwing a lot of money around, and even though I had higher ratings than any of the Air America hosts, they paid money, and I didn't. And money talks higher than ratings. And so I got kicked off the air there, and I was going to that Take Back conference, and I met you and was kindly invited by Bob Kincaid to join the Head On Radio Network, and I've been proud to be here ever since.
Well, hey, Mark, we're going to take a break right now, and we'll be right back, and I think we might have Jeff Allen Wolf with
us. I think
we
will.
Come back. All right.
This is Gore Vidal. Can you name the one country on earth where the government can steal elections, strip away basic rights, spy on civilians, launch wars based on lies, and where the people do not take over the nation's capital in protest? If you said the United States, you would be right. So let's remedy that by calling our Congress members and asking them to support the impeachment of George Bush and Dick Cheney. This message is sponsored by AfterDowningStreet.org.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
Hey friends, Eric Estrada here. Just like you, I'm really into engines, but there's something else that I'm into even more. Taking care of the planet. I bet you didn't know that motor oil from one oil change dumped in a drain or on the ground can contaminate 1 million gallons of fresh water. That means that if we don't recycle it, we could be drinking it. So take your used oil to your nearest recycling center or call toll-free 1-800-CLEANUP. Remember, if you dump it, you'll drink it.
Okay, and we're back here with the Guy James Show. Don't know what happened to all my... I pulled the wrong switch. That happens in live radio. Hey, welcome back. You're listening to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. We've got Mark Levine with us. Mark, you still with us?
I am.
And we're going to have Jeff Allen Wolf call in here in a minute. I guess he's trying right now, so we'll wait for him to give us a call. Mark, you live in Washington. You're around that city every day. I think you've got a good finger on the pulse of what goes on in Washington. It's a different kind of place, isn't it? You know, it's just completely different. I had somebody tell me here a while back that it's not. Well, Ray McGovern. We were talking to Ray McGovern about it, and Ray said it really is just a tiny little village. Tell us about that, what you know about that.
Well, it is. I mean, maybe less so than it used to be even, but it's definitely a place still where Republican staffers and Democratic staffers can get together after a drink. I do think it's less common than it used to be in the days of Tip O'Neill and Ronald Reagan, who would get together for a drink. I certainly don't expect George Bush and Nancy Pelosi to be, you know, sitting back and talking about life. No, that doesn't happen anymore. But we do know our people across the aisle. We definitely, you know, all kinds of things are whispered. So it's a small town in the sense that we always see each other. We run into each other. At the same time, it is more polarized, probably, than it's ever been before. And so, and in that way, it is a change from the past.
Well, how about the staffers, okay? We know a lot of politicians have open warfare amongst them, and probably some of them still do go have a drink together and what all. But how about the staffers on Capitol Hill? You've been on Capitol. Give us a little bit of the skinny, what goes on there. Do any of those people hang out across the party lines and all?
Absolutely. And you got to remember that most of Washington is run by people in their 20s. A lot of people don't realize that. Certainly on the Hill, maybe in the White House, they're in their 30s, and on Capitol Hill, they're in their 20s, most of them. And they're people just out of college, fresh with ideals, maybe not too much fresh with how real life works, but they certainly mean well, and generally work very hard and very patriotically for, let's face it, some very demanding bosses. A lot of the people, Senate, and House, Democrat and Republican, who are in our Congress, are not so nice to their staffers, I'm sorry to say. And so, you know, they work under demanding conditions.
Let me ask you some of the real inside stuff on staffers, something I've always wondered about that I really don't know about. Okay, you've got, I was in a senator's office the other day, and, of course, they've got two receptionists there, and they're talking about, well, you know, they welcome in. What kind of money do those people make?
Oh, not that much. It depends. There's a wide range. If you go in just sort of a starting job as maybe a legislative correspondent, they're the kind of people who are responding to constituent mail. They don't just write themselves. They ask the member what to say. But that might could be as low as 25,000, 30,000. I'm a real starting position. If you go up to some of the senior staff that are running committees or maybe working for the leaders of the House, I think you get up there in the six figures. But those are rare. I would say the average staffer who's been around a little while is making 40 or 50 grand, and then if you work on a committee, it might be 60 or 70. But these aren't, you know, most of these people, they could do a lot better in the private sector. They're there because they believe in what they're doing.
And it's a different town in terms of what time they work, isn't it? The schedule seems to go pretty late for a lot of folks.
Well, it does, though it depends, again, this Democratic Congress is going to work a lot harder. They're going to work 5 days a week. Hey, that's a stretch. When I was there, under the Republican Congress, they worked 2 days a week. They would work from Tuesday night to about Thursday night. Tuesday would be bills that would be like naming post offices and really unimportant bills. The real legislative work started on Wednesday and tended to end late into the evening on Thursday night. One of the reasons why they would pass bills late in the night on Thursday night is that way they could twist arms and do all kinds of shenanigans that wouldn't go into the newspaper. If you pass a bill like the Medicare prescription drug bill, which they held open all night from Thursday midnight to Friday at about 6 in the morning, even though you're supposed to only have a 15-minute holdover, when they do that and they twist arms and they bribe people on the House floor, then it's too late to appear in the Friday morning papers. So the only time it can appear is in the Saturday morning papers, and they know that Saturday is the least read day of all 7 days of the week for the public. Plus, by the time it appears Saturday morning, something that happened late Thursday night, early Friday morning, is already old news. So it's a great way to hide when you throw a lot of earmarks in, or you want to do a very controversial bill, or you want to bribe someone on the House floor. It's a great way to keep that kind of stuff out of the news. So the Republicans did all their most controversial things through Thursday night after midnight into the wee morning hours on Friday. So, yes, we would work very long hours Thursday night, but, Monday we'd be home at 5. There was nothing to do because there was no business on Monday. So weird hours, I would say.
So the staffers do work Monday through Friday regardless.
Oh, yes. The staffers work Monday through Friday, occasionally on weekends. But they'll also, like I said, Thursday night we'd all be there because, they're working late into the night. The congressmen, they can be wherever they are. The staffers go to work every day. There's business every day. A constituent has a need. You don't necessarily need to go to the member of Congress. Someone is having trouble with a Social Security check or an immigration problem or something personal to them. You can already call and get on it. You don't need to consult the member. We want to try to help the constituent any way we can. Certainly we would use them for advice, but they don't have to be in town for a lot of business to happen.
Okay. Hey, I do want to remind, let our listeners know, I'm told that we've got a phone problem. It's not here in the studio. It is with our carrier. We're trying to get it fixed so that we can get more callers to call in. And so bear with us on that. It is not here. It is with the carrier right now. So we'll
Jeff Allen Wolf is trying to call in and
yes.
Having trouble reaching us.
I'm going to try something right here and put you on a different line. And if I screw up here, I'm going to go to a break and call me back. Okay, Mark?
Fair enough.
There you go. Are you still with us?
I'm still with you.
Okay. Well, we'll have Jeff try again to see.
Okay.
See if this helps anything here. Anyway, we're talking about working on Capitol Hill. So most everybody puts in at least a 40-hour week.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Well,
excuse me, that's staffers, not necessarily members.
Well, that's what I'm going for here. that's where I'm wanting to end up. What kind of hours were they putting in during the Republican?
What they're doing is they're putting hours in different places. They're spending more time fundraising than they are in Washington. They're spending more time in their home districts, whether it be Texas or Georgia or Florida or wherever it is, than they are in Washington. In fact, that's one of the main reasons why business was only conducted on Wednesday and Thursday. They spent 2 days a week in Washington, doing the people's business, and 5 days a week going around doing the lobbyist business, grabbing as much money as they can. And that's literally the way it worked in Washington. And unfortunately, the Democrats often had to do the same kind of stuff to play ball with the Republicans. They also had to raise huge sums of cash. Of course, I and most Democrats, and I'm sure you do too, guys, support public financing of campaigns to break the back between corporate interests owning our members of Congress. But that's largely why they wouldn't be working those other 5 days of the week. It's not so much they wouldn't be working. I mean, they'd be there, but they'd be going around grabbing cash rather than writing bills.
Well, I'd like to know your opinion on that since you brought it up. I've been adamant about money in campaigns. I'd like to see all of it done away with, if that's possible. I'd like to see the radio and TV and newspapers all cooperate in a joint effort to allow our candidates to get out and speak. Maybe it's not practical to dump all the money, but to dump anything except public money, campaign contributions through our taxes or whatever. Do you think it's possible to do that?
Well, that's how Europe does it. That's exactly how virtually every other democracy on earth does it. You look at the English campaigns, and instead of lasting 2 years, they last about 60 days. They get in there, and the government funds both parties, and they have an equal say, and they get in, and they do their television commercials, and boom, 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 60 days later, it's done. And the best part is they're not beholden to anyone. I mean, we have members of Congress owned by their corporate sponsors. I mean, some are egregious. Obviously, you have Tom DeLay and Duke Cunningham and you know, Jack Abramoff and all he did, Bob Ney. I mean, the list goes on and on. But even the stuff that's legal, honestly, to me, is more scary than the stuff that's illegal, because without crossing the line, you can rake in millions of dollars from some corporate group, and then you can turn around and vote for what they want and say, well, I would have done it even if they hadn't paid me. Well, that's a bunch of bull. I don't believe it for a second, and yet that is legal. And one of the things I really hope the Democrats have done and will continue to do with their ethics bill is to cut down on this kind of thing. But honestly, until we get public financing completely, I don't think this will ever go away as a problem.
I don't think it will either. I talk about it all the time, but I think that getting that power in Washington is some sort of an aphrodisiac, and almost all of them are desperate not to give it up. Do you get that opinion from them?
That power is an aphrodisiac?
Oh, for the senators and the House members, it seems to me that once they get in there, they're desperate to hang on to it. It's the last thing in the world they want to do is lose their seat.
Well, I think that is true for most of them. I mean, that's you know, I mean, look at our president. To me, George Bush is not president because he has any particular ideas. I mean, this is the guy that went in and said, I don't believe in nation building, just, you know, a year before he went in to rebuild the nation of Iraq. He just wants to be president. He likes to prance around with a flight suit, stand in front of Mission Accomplished, and say, Daddy, look at me, I'm president. He's not really there for ideas. Now, some people are on the left and the right. There are certainly people there that have their ideas. You know, when I look at sort of some of the thinkers on the Democratic Party, people like Russ Feingold or Barbara Boxer, or heck, even Joe Lieberman, and I disagree with him most of the time, at least he believes, I think, in what he believes in. I think he's dead wrong. Tom Tancredo's dead wrong on immigration, but he actually believes in the stuff. But I, in many ways, they're the exception. I think most of them are sort of going along to getting along and seeing whatever they can do to get reelected and aren't there as true believers. They may start as true believers, but a lot of times, after a while, they end up as just owned by the corporate interests.
What kind of a while? How long does it take for the senior members to get them sit down in the office and say, "Hey, boy, you better play ball, or you're going to be on the Capitol Toilet Committee"?
Well, you know that again. I think it depends on House and Senate and parties. In the House, Tom DeLay was very, very good at that. There's never been such iron discipline as the Tom DeLay Republicans, and there may never be again. What he would do is he would literally line them up so that he would take, for example, Robin Hayes. Robin Hayes is an elderly Republican guy in North Carolina, eastern North Carolina. Now, his area that he represents heavily depends on textiles. That's just what they do. They have a lot of heavy textile industry. Well, he was needed to vote on a bill that would, you know, outsource textiles to because the corporations that own Tom DeLay wanted that. Well, Robin Hayes didn't want to vote on that because his constituents didn't want to lose all those jobs. But what Tom DeLay does is he takes all what he did when he ran the place, and Denny Hastert never ran the place. Tom DeLay ran it all. And he would put the Republicans, and he'd have a list, and he always wanted to win by one vote. So if he was one vote short, he'd grab one from the list. And these are all these Republicans who wanted to vote the way their constituents wanted, but understood that their boss was not their constituents, but was Tom DeLay. And so, so if Tom DeLay had to have them switch their votes to make a bill pass, he would pull them one for one off the list. That's, in fact, the problem with the Medicare drug bill, was that a few Republicans on the list, it didn't go the way Tom DeLay wanted, and that's why they had to hold the bill open all night and switch them. But getting back to Robin Hayes, Tom DeLay needed that vote. He was not going to get the bill he needed to serve his corporate masters unless he had Robin Hayes' vote. And so literally, Robin Hayes, who's sort of a, I don't know, he's a guy in his 70s, kind of a heavy-set man, sort of a gruff guy, is literally crying, bawling his eyes out on the House of Representatives as he casts a vote that would harm his constituents because Tom DeLay insisted that he did. And his tears are flowing. This is a guy who I don't know that cries very much, but literally is crying because he knows he can't do the right thing. He's got to follow Tom DeLay. We Democrats don't have near that kind of discipline.
Unbelievable story. Unbelievable story. We're going to be back in just a minute. Stay with us. You're listening to The Guy James Show. Thank you. And we're back. You're listening to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. Glad to have all of you along with us. I have discovered that our Vonage system is not exactly working the way it's supposed to. First time I've ever had any trouble with it, so we shall see here what goes on with that. Anyway, we'll try and get that corrected if we can. Although it's a little difficult. If you have Vonage, I think you'll find out that probably the most difficult thing in having Vonage is customer service if you ever have to get it. It's almost impossible. So, anyway, we're back with the Guy James Show. Technical trouble and all with the phone line. Sorry about that. We're doing what we can about it right now. Mark, are you with us?
I am still with you.
Okay,
I'm the only
see?
One apparently that can get through.
Evidently you are. And if you have Jeff Allen Wolf give us a call, have him try that one more time. The last number I gave you, and I'm going to kick off this answering machine on this $5,000 phone machine here, and we'll see what happens. You never know. Here we are talking about inside troubles here on the Mark Levine Inside Scoop visit to the Guy James Show. Mark has his program on 2 to 3 o'clock, and he does have the Inside Scoop, and we've been kind of quizzing him about that, some things that I always wanted to know about the inside. Hey, Mark, I want to talk a little bit about right-wing and maybe even some of the left talk show hosts for a moment. Michelle Malkin, you ever cross paths with her?
I've never met her personally, but I've certainly seen her and heard her.
She's a nasty piece of work.
Is she?
she accused Joe Wilson, you know, that said all he did when he went to Niger was drink mint tea with his buddies, and I think we're finding out otherwise now. This whole thing is blowing up in their faces. The only trouble is, as far as Cheney's concerned, we're probably not looking at anything illegal, are we?
Well, I think we are.
I do. Okay, that's the lawyer in you coming out.
I think Scooter Libby's going to be convicted.
Scooter will, but will they be able to get Cheney on anything actually illegal? Unethical, yes, but how about illegal?
Well, let's see. I don't want to preclude it. I mean, part of what prosecutors do is they put a lot of pressure on people lower down to get them to turn over people higher up. I'm waiting for Cheney to testify. And, this Cheney is someone who lies at the drop of a hat. I mean, we've seen it again and again and again and again. Lie, like he doesn't even know what the truth is. He has to testify, and he's got to tell the truth. And it's the first time in his life that he's got to tell the truth, and he's got to do it in a public forum. He may well commit perjury yet, guys. So, keep the cannon powder dry. I'm not giving up on Dick Cheney. I have to say, for all the talk people talk about impeaching President Bush, actually, I think impeaching Cheney is an easier option. And while I don't think it's possible yet, again, let's wait and see. I got to tell you, I want to go to some of that trial. I'm looking forward to attending some of that, living here in Washington. And just watching them squirm is always an enjoyable thing to do.
Oh, yeah. Well, suppose Cheney gets up on the stand and says, yes, I did tell him about Joe Wilson's wife, Valerie Plame. It says, so what? It's not illegal, and I'm the vice president, and you're not.
Well, he could say that, but see, he's got this ego here where he doesn't want to have to admit, I think, that knowing that Joe Wilson was telling the truth and knowing that it was so important for him and for the president to lie to the American people to make them think that Iraq was developing nuclear weapons in order to get us into a war for oil companies, he's going to have to admit, under some very fierce cross-examination, that he purposely wanted to lie to the American public and therefore wanted to out Joe Wilson's wife as a way of discrediting him, like Michelle Malkin or anyone else. One of the best ways that the right wing uses to discredit people is not to go into what they're saying. He can't really dispute that, there was no nothing going down in Niger, but to attack them personally. I mean, as they did to Richard Clark and Paul O'Neill and any of the rest of them. So he's going to really be torn because he's so used to lying that I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised if he commits perjury, and boy, wouldn't that be fun.
Well, yes, it would. I would fly to Washington. I'd get a ticket to see him let out in chains. I would. I don't think there's anything that could please me more. I am so Oh, I just filled with disgust with that man. But I think the
I think that you and I were talking over dinner. We've both independently done shows featuring Chaney as Darth Vader, and now Jon Stewart is doing it as well. I just want to say I did it before Jon Stewart, and you did it before Jon Stewart. Great minds think alike. But go ahead.
That's right. And I think the real bonus out of this trial, I mean, Scooter Libby, he's small potatoes. I think what's going to come out of this trial is going to uncover all the BS that happened leading into this war, and I think it's probably going to finally land smack in the face of the public exactly what happened and how we got led into this war on a pack of lies. Isn't that what we're really after here?
Well, exactly, and that's why it's coming across every day in the Washington Post, and those of us in Washington, I think, are following this trial more closely than the rest of America, which I'm sorry to hear. This is not a trial about official Washington. This is a trial about how the administration lied to get us into war, about the kind of lies that cost us thousands of American lives, tens of thousands wounded, hundreds of thousands of Iraqi lives. These are important things, and I don't want anyone to think the Scooter Libby trial is just, you know, a bunch of Washington insiders, you know, throwing dirt at each other. It is that, but it's much, much broader than that. And I'm kind of afraid, and I guess my question for you, Guy, is how is this story playing outside the Beltway? Because it's really big news here, but I worry that outside the Beltway, y'all aren't really getting it.
I think you're exactly right. I don't think it's that big of a deal. I've talked to several people around here, and it's all my, you know, the thing you hear, oh, that's just that partisan crap going on in Washington. I don't really pay any attention to it. And you're right. The Post. I love the Post, and it had stories in it about it every day while I was there last week. Big stories. And
page every day, still today, yesterday.
Yeah, and
but you're not seeing it down there in Florida, are you?
Not that much. Not that much. It's certainly not a big story, and that's just the way this administration wants it. I know.
It is very much the way they want it, and yet what's interesting to me is, and I know that I guess sex is sexier than treachery, but I don't know. I think treachery is kind of sexy. But, you know, I mean, whether or not Bill Clinton was doing whatever with Monica Lewinsky, that was what the perjury trap was for him on. This is on whether the vice president of the United States outed a CIA agent, risking the lives of Americans, doing the kind of crimes that, after all, we've had people executed for treason. I mean, you can't get a more serious crime than treason. And yet, somehow, that's not as interesting as Monica Lewinsky. I don't know. I mean, for me, treason is pretty important. And, in fact, I did a show 3 years ago called Dick Cheney, the Traitor of Traitorgate. And I firmly believe that not only was he behind all this, but we're going to find out more information as time goes on. I'm watching this trial very closely, and Dick Cheney is the focus, and as well he should be, because largely this war, he's done more to create this war than anyone else. People blame Don Rumsfeld, but Rumsfeld is just a creature of Cheney. Dick Cheney is very much in control here, and the old joke in Washington is if Dick Cheney dies, George Bush becomes president, but not until then.
The insurance factor, Dick Cheney. About the impeachment thing, we had a little spark going on the program yesterday about that. One of our regular callers, and I'm trying very hard to understand both sides of this. I've got an opinion on it. I want to see what you think. One of our regular callers yesterday, and again, it's Phil from Daytona, and I want you to know, Phil, I very much respect your point of view. It's not that I don't. I do. I'm trying to look at it both sides. A lot of people are wanting impeachment, and they're wanting it right now. Right now. They want to go right into impeachment. They wanted John Conyers to bring about impeachment proceedings this very moment. And I'm saying, wait a minute, we've got to get our shovels out and uncover the dirt first and some investigations. How do you feel about it?
Well, I agree with you. Sorry, Phil, if you disagree. You're welcome to call into my show and discuss it with me as well. And I tell you who also agrees with you and me, Guy, and it's John Conyers. I happen to know John Conyers very well. I worked primarily on Judiciary Committee for most of my time in Congress and sat behind Mr. Conyers. And I assure you, there's nothing John Conyers would like better than to impeach George W. Bush. He would salivate at the notion. But he's a very smart man, and he knows that just because you want something to happen, sometimes the best way to get something to happen isn't to go through the front door, but to build up the kind of support you need to actually go, you know, through the front door and out in the yard, to extend the metaphor. Look, could the Democrats impeach President Bush, much as the Republicans impeached Bill Clinton. Impeachment, of course, is merely a vote in the House to send it over to the Senate. Yes, I think they could. But to just do what the Republicans did, you know, impeach the president, send it over to the Senate, have the Senate not do the two-thirds necessary to convict, and thus acquit the guy, to me isn't enough. I guess it's symbolic, and that's all well and good. But as Republicans might remember, when they tried against Bill Clinton in 98, Bill Clinton got support. In fact, he's one of the few presidents in the sixth year of his term to actually gain seats in the House. It's very rare for a president to do that because people felt that the Republicans were riding Clinton out on a railroad. What Conyers has to do, and John Conyers knows this very well, is he has to subpoena the president's men and women, bring them before the Judiciary Committee, look at the documents, and build a case so that, as they did with Richard Nixon, not just Democrats, not just independents, but Republicans themselves see the corruption of the president. And I don't think that's impossible to do. But I think it certainly is not an easy task, and it takes a lot of time and effort. And I just think impeachment is premature.
I'm looking. Yeah, I agree with everything you said. I really do. I think we've got to work on the Republicans. I want it to be the Republicans on their side of the House and the Senate to go to the president and say, hey. Hey man, this is serious. I don't want it to look like that we're going to conduct a public hanging here. I think
that's what happened with Richard Nixon. That's exactly what happened with Nixon. The Republicans saw the writing on the wall, and in order to protect their seats, went to Nixon and asked him to resign. And until you have that kind of overwhelming evidence, you're just not going to get that kind of support. We haven't had control of the subpoena power. They've kept everything secret. We haven't had any control until just now. The Democrats haven't even been there a month yet, not even a month
right.
yet. They need time to develop this argument, and it's just not going to happen overnight.
And one can argue that investigations are part of the impeachment, the actual impeachment process, that they can file for impeachment and then do the investigations, and that's what a lot of people are calling for that want this done right now. But
I think that's backwards. And I also think we have to remember that in many ways, Dick Cheney is more criminal and more liable and more dirty with war crimes and other kinds of things than the president himself. And, you know, to impeach George Bush, to bring in President Cheney, I mean, talk about out of the frying pan into the fire. I'm one of the few people who said on the air that I actually think that impeachment proceedings should be directed at Cheney first. He's actually more dangerous than George Bush, in my view. And, you know, if you impeach the vice president, the president appoints another one but has to do it with the approval of Congress. That would be a major statement. It would achieve a lot. And in many ways, I think, would be more respected by the American people than an impeachment of George Bush. You know, Bush's opinion ratings are about 28% to 33%. Cheney's are in the teens.
Oh, you know, Cheney's got to be the most hated, despicable public figure that there's ever been in this country. I've tried the past few days to think back in my lifetime, and there's certainly nobody in my lifetime that's been treated with such well. People hate him. I mean, let's face it.
Yeah, no, they do. His ratings are lower than Richard Nixon's. Now, Bush's are still higher. Nixon went to the low 20s, as I said. Bush, the lowest rating I've ever seen for Bush is 28, which is higher than Richard Nixon's 22 to 25. Cheney, I've seen 17, I've seen 15. So, yes, he is even more hated than Richard Nixon was at the height of Watergate.
And I do want our listeners to know, I had a chance during the breaks of these meetings we had last week, and conference on Tuesday and then again on Wednesday morning meeting with folks, the talk of impeachment, let me tell you, it's alive and well with our elected Democrats. It's very alive and well. They're not publicly out there every day talking about it.
No,
but
they do it in whispers. They do it in private.
You bet. Yeah, and they, you know, I asked a couple of them right up front. They said, hey, it's not off the table. It's something that very well might happen, but we're going to play our cards right. And so I understand, and I know you do too. We're talking about investigations and all that, and it's going to take time, and there are going to be more lives lost in the meantime. There are, but unfortunately, I don't see any way out of it.
Well, in terms of lives lost, and that's another issue, is of course the war in Iraq. Totally apart from any, you know, crimes the president or vice president have done, is the awful mistake of the war in Iraq. Some of it was criminal, and some of it was just really, really stupid, bad dangerous policy. And, of course, right now the big talk is what's going on in the Senate with trying to find the proper resolution of disapproval. And here again, the Democrats are taking it slow. You have activists on the left, including hundreds of thousands that just marched in Washington just this last weekend, saying, you know, bring our troops home now. And, in fact, Russ Feingold today, I heard, just introduced a bill that would cut off funding completely for the Iraq war. But even his bill, which is the strongest I've seen, and it's not non-binding, it is binding, would take about 6 months because, of course, the way the money works in Congress is they appropriate the money, and then it's in the pike, and then the president spends it and then has to come back for more. And literally there's nothing we can do about the next 6 months. Even if Russ Feingold's bill passes over the president's veto tomorrow, which isn't going to happen because we don't have two-thirds support in the House and the Senate, but even if that would happen tomorrow, we still couldn't cut off the funding for another 6 months. That's just, you know, it's in the pipeline. So what the Democrats are trying to do through these non-binding resolutions is to show the administration the overwhelming popular view against this war in Iraq, including a bunch of Republicans who are really nervous right now. 20 of them are running for re-election in the Senate in 08, and including places like Minnesota and Maine and other blue states. And they're very concerned. And so the hope is to actually get them to turn around now.
We shall see. Hey, where's the time going here? Before the top of the hour, I wanted to have a discussion about this, but we're not going to be able to. I want a quick reaction when I go down through this list from you.
Okay.
We can do it one word, two words, but Laura Ingraham.
Arrogant as all get out.
Sean Hannity.
Also arrogant, but whereas Laura Ingraham is sort of downright snippy and mean, Hannity likes to pretend he's the nice guy, but he very much considers himself royalty. I mean, Ingraham will jump down your throat in a nasty way. What Hannity will do is he'll say, well, I'm above it all. I won't even talk with you.
Limbaugh.
Limbaugh is an idiot. I mean, Limbaugh is he's two things. He's an idiot and he's a performance artist. Of course, the best performance artist is Ann Coulter. We can get to her in a minute. But Limbaugh, I actually don't think believes a lot of what he's saying. I think he's a showman. He's quite a good showman.
Very good.
But he uses words like feminazis. Does he really think all feminists are Nazis? No, but he knows that by using such an awful, egregious term, he can get a lot more people listening into his program. He's all about increasing his ratings, and he says some of the most offensive things he does, not because he believes them, but because, they'll increase his ratings, and he's right about that.
I think if the money is good, he'd flip tomorrow.
Absolutely.
Well, here's a good one. Mark Levin.
Mark Levin, my namesake. Now, this is a guy. He has my name without the E on the end. I detest the man. I actually, whenever I hear his show, he just says things that are just idiotic and stupid. But the best thing about Mark Levin is that he has a name similar enough to mine that I get his listeners that write in, call in from time to time, and it's hilarious because they're fully expecting him, and they hear me. And sometimes, particularly on an email exchanges, if they don't hear my voice, I can persuade them that I'm right when they think that I'm him because they're so stupid that they'll do ditto head type things. And I'll just give them my point of view, which is completely 180 degrees from Mark Levin. And hearing it from who they think is him, they'll kind of go, oh, yeah, okay, all right. You make a good point.
Ed Schultz.
You know, he's a blowhard. In many ways, Ed Schultz, I may lose some fans here, but I think in some ways he's like Rush Limbaugh. I mean, in the sense that he can be bought.
He has been on both sides.
I don't think he's very smart. I don't think he knows what's going on in Washington. He may well know what goes on in the plains of Fargo, North Dakota. But I think he's a blowhard, and I think he's a lot of shout, but without much substance.
Okay. Let me see who else we got here on this list. Randy Rhodes.
You're just totally ruining my career.
Yeah, Randy. Oh, mine too. I agree with you. Randy Rhodes.
I like Randy Rhodes. I think she's. I wouldn't want. I'll tell you this. In terms of all the people that you've mentioned, she's the one I'd be most afraid of. I guess disagreeing with because she's very persistent. She knows her facts. She can be annoying to some people because she's so persistent, but I have a lot of respect for Randy Rhodes, and I won't say anything bad about her.
Let's see. One left on the list here. Where did it go? Oh, O'Reilly.
Bill O'Reilly. Has there ever been a more smug human being? He is absolutely convinced that the world revolves around him, that he can't even conceive of him being wrong. He's the kind of guy who can, you know, pay off, I forget, the hooker or all the details of the sexual, I don't remember all that stuff, but literally think he's right, literally think that he's got nothing to be afraid of. He's a man who cannot put himself in another man's shoes. He literally cannot think outside of his own perspective. And sometimes I have to say he's so smug that it's amusing to watch how smug he is.
I think you're right. Mark, thanks so much for being on the show today. We've got to do this again. I really have enjoyed this, and we've had 2 hours of conversation, and I think we could talk for all day quite easily.
Easily.
So we'll get together, and we'll do this again. Ladies and gentlemen, Mark Levine. The good one, and that's got the E on the end there. And Mark, thanks so much for being with us on the Guy James Show.
I appreciate it, and my website's radioinsightscoop.com for any of your listeners that want to join me an hour before you go on the air.
You bet. Thank you.
Thanks again, Guy.
All right. Mark Levine. I tell you, Mark's a great guy, a very interesting guy. He's just as gregarious and bubbly and all that as you hear on the radio in person. He's a really a terrific guy. I'm so glad I got a chance to talk at length with him the other day. So, hey, we're going to pause for news at the top of the hour. We'll be right back.
Quality News Network. In Germany, arrest warrants have been issued for 13 suspected CIA agents. They are wanted in connection with the alleged mistaken kidnapping of a German citizen of Lebanese descent. The man was allegedly held in a secret prison in Afghanistan for several months and beaten during his interrogation before he was released without being charged. In Boston, the discovery of several suspicious packages today forced the closure of two bridges. Authorities now say the devices were a hoax. In Birmingham, England, 9 people were arrested in an alleged kidnapping plot. It involved the torture and beheading of a British Muslim soldier. For the second day, members of the Iraq Study Group appeared before a congressional hearing. Co-chair, former Representative Lee Hamilton, said the training of the Iraqi police force has been botched. In Iraq today, the U.S. military said an American soldier was killed in combat. The death brings this month's American military death toll to 85. Overall, there have been 3,085 U.S. troops killed in the Iraq War. Also in Iraq today, in mostly Shiite neighborhoods, bombs and mortars killed at least 12 people at several locations. An apparent retaliatory mortar attack on a Sunni neighborhood killed 4 people. President Bush spoke about the economy today in New York. He took on Wall Street CEOs who earn big salaries and bonuses. The president acknowledged that many Americans are angry about the executives' huge salaries. Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez said today that he will give the Senate Judiciary Committee secret documents with details of the government's controversial domestic spying program. The announcement today ends a 2-week standoff with Congress. There are as many as 5 different non-binding resolutions among lawmakers who are critical of President Bush's 21,000 troop surge in Iraq. In an effort to control Republican opposition, President Bush will meet with GOP senators on Friday at the White House. Wisconsin Senator Russ Feingold says he'll introduce legislation today to cut off funding for the Iraq War to put an end to U.S. involvement in the conflict. The Democrat says money for the war would dry up 6 months after the bill is enacted. Democratic Senator Joe Biden of Delaware officially opened his 2008 presidential campaign today by filing papers with the Federal Election Commission. And author Sidney Shelton died yesterday at the age of 89. He was a prolific writer, and several of his novels became television miniseries. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Science and business news coming up next.
Most people would rather have a root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to rightcarrightprice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to rightcarrightprice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
Citizenship and Immigration Services may nearly double the application fee for U.S. citizenship from $330 to $595. The cost of becoming a legal permanent resident may nearly triple from $325 to $905. The U.S. Census Bureau will go high-tech for the 2010 count. Temporary workers will use handheld computers to make the count more accurate and precise. The Commerce Department reports in the fourth quarter the U.S. economy grew at a 3.5% rate. That was more than economists had expected. U.S. Airways has withdrawn its nearly $10 billion cash and stock takeover bid for bankrupt Delta Airlines after Delta's creditors rejected it. Boeing reports its fourth quarter earnings more than doubled, beating Wall Street forecasts. The airplane manufacturer said that was due to strong commercial plane and defense-related orders. General Electric reports today it received $1 billion worth of orders in Saudi Arabia for water processing and power-generating projects. The Federal Reserve has left the benchmark interest rate at its current mark, 5.25%. Light sweet crude has been trading above $58 a barrel today. Currently, it's at $57.96. And the Dow Jones is in record territory near the close of Wall Street today. The Dow is up 105 points at 12,628. The Nasdaq is up 15 points and the S&P 500 up 10. There's always more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Allie Dramov.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. Glad to have all of you along with us here on the Guy James Show this afternoon. Don't forget, I'm Guy James, and you're not. I'm having a good time with that this week. Can you imagine the gall of Mr. Dick Cheney to say that in public? I really can't. You know I'm kidding when I say it. Hey, I do want to thank Mark Levine for being on the program. Terrific guy. Great conversation. Hope you enjoyed it. And I do want to apologize to our next guest, is Jeff Allen Wolf. We wanted to have him on along with us, and here we had some Vonage phone trouble, but we have it corrected now. If you'd like to call in, you may at 866-546-5254. And Jeff, are you with us?
Do you see what I've caused? Technology. What did I do? I'm the Democrat. I'm the good guy with you guys. And all of a sudden, I got paranoid. I thought it was a conspiracy.
It's an international phone crisis. What can I say?
Worth waiting for.
We've got the goons, the goon squad out there. No, that's the geek squad. I'm sorry.
Funny.
Yeah. Hey, welcome to the show. A lot of folks may not even know who you are yet. And it's one of the reasons we wanted to have you on. We're so proud of our Head On Radio Network staff. I don't know, staff. Team. Let's put it that way. We're not staff. We're team.
Club. We'll call it a club.
Club. There you go. Thank you. But we're really proud of the people we have on this network, and you're a great addition to it. And I don't know if anybody's I do know some of my listeners, of course, are listening to your program. Tell us about it. First of all, give us your website, Jeff.
Actually, the website is not available yet. It's still being in the finishing processes.
Okay.
The processes are processed. As soon as it is, I'll announce that, and I'll pass it along to you and everyone else. But we're just touching up some things, and we want to make sure there's content on there. We don't want to send anybody there and go, oh, what a pretty site, but nothing's going on there. So we're kind of holding back a little bit.
Okay. I know what you mean with that. I'm in the process of getting mine completely changed around. And, you know, something is an integral part of a talk show, and mine's not been interactive enough, and so that's something we want to change. And I want to be able to put some things up there every day that I haven't.
Same exact thing you're doing. I didn't want it to just be a pretty a view and they never come back. I wanted to make sure that there was enough content there that they would return. So I understand what you're doing now, also.
Yeah, and you know, I got a picture of myself on there, and I know all my fans have gone there and said, "Oh my God, what a good looking guy this is." But it's more than that. I'm more than just a pretty face. Actually, they shriek.
That's not what I heard, though.
They shriek when they see me in person. It's horrible.
Like Elvis, all right.
My eyes.
I'm blind. I'm
yes. Oh, Jeff. So you're going to be on 11 to 1 now.
11 to 1, finally.
Monday through Friday.
Monday through Friday. We're working out the technical. We've had some glitches this week. Monday was the debut program, but we had to run some repeats because of some streaming issues and technical studio issues. We were changing our streaming address, IP, the whole nine yards. I don't want to bore anybody with that. But hopefully by the end of this week, starting Monday, we'll be regular where it'll be consistent without any problems.
All right. From Studio 19.
From Studio 19.
All right. Are you actually in Phoenix?
We're just outside of Phoenix. We overlook, as I say on the show, overlook the Superstition Mountains. So we're about 20-25 minutes away.
My brother lives right in that neighborhood.
Oh, cool. If you're ever down here visiting your brother, we got to get together.
Yeah,
for some
absolutely.
Lunch
and that's coming up not too far down there. My brother just moved there from Ohio a few months ago and built a new house, and they look at the Superstition Mountains as well. So
terrific. We're neighbors.
Hey, the rest of you, we're just talking here. Don't pay attention. We'll get to business here in a minute. Jeff, I do want to ask you how long. Give us a little bit of your history. How long you been doing radio?
I have actually been, and this is always funny because I get a lot of people who come across me and say, you know, welcome aboard, you're the new kid on the block, and I laugh at that because I've been doing radio for 16 years and was in South Florida, and I believe was the number 12th market, you know, all these numbers that they give you, but did radio for a while, more non-political, more... I'm not trying to compare, but like a Johnny Carson, a David Letterman, a morning show type, a magazine, fun, laid back, wake you up in the morning type of show. Not a morning zoo type of show by no stretch of the imagination, but, you know, very conversational. And every now and then a little political, and only recently, in the last 6 to 7 months, let's say, someone said, why don't you just talk about politics on the air and go more serious and become more journalistic instead of just being silly? And I said, why not? And the internet bug hit, and I've, you know, heard about the internet for years. And I said, you know something, instead of trying to be on a local station and being heard all over Arizona or all over California, which is wonderful, you've got the power of the internet. And you could stream worldwide potentially and have millions of listeners instead of just one localized state. So we took the bug, we took the bite, we built a studio, and we are here and now on the Head On Radio Network.
Very good. Very good. It's great when you start getting correspondence from, well, you just never know.
Well, it's a surprising thing, Guy, because, you know, they say real men don't cry or real men are not touched, and that's a bunch of BS. The first couple of months we were on the air on other networks, and before Head On, we started receiving emails from ridiculous places, from Poland, Russia, and the Kingdom of Tonga. I have a listener who's listening on a boat. He's an expatriate and moved there, and this guy's writing and listening on dial-up, and I'm saying, this is phenomenal. It humbles you. It makes you realize that it's not, you know, it's not just all a fun public relations thing. You're not doing it for the hell of it. You actually have people out there listening to what you're saying, and you have to have a little responsibility and due diligence on what you talk about on the air.
Oh, no, I am very envious now. I have never gotten a response to anybody from Tonga.
I'm stunned. This man was, it was hilarious reading these emails, and every time, if I may just talk about this for a second, about the power of internet, because we were talking about the explosion. I think internet is in its infancy, and I think we're at the right time right now. Being on the Head On Radio Network with their America problems, and, you know, there's not a lot of progressive talk that's available to the masses out there. I really believe that. And to start seeing emails, male, female, young, old, all over the country come in on a daily basis was stunning. I read it to my girlfriend. We'd sit down at dinner, and the running joke was, who did you get emails from today? And when I let her read it, some of them in depth, she says, you're kidding me. You know, Minsk, you know, Brooklyn, South Florida, and then Spain in a bistro he's listening to on his cell phone. I'm saying it is a stunning situation, Diane, and it is an exciting situation to be in this and be in this fraternity club we're talking about with the Head On Radio Network, the power that we have to, you know, talk to people around the world.
Hey, we've got a good group here. We've got a very good group here. You know, we just spoke to Mark Levine a little bit ago. Mark is as well informed as they come. Dr. Bill, my God, you know, they're not any smarter or more cerebral than Dr. Bill. And John Fox, what a guy. And have you had any technical advice from John Fox?
Actually, John and I have been burning up the airwaves with the cell phone. I think I have a radiation burn mark on my left side of my face from talking with him a couple of days ago for 2 hours on the cell phone.
If he doesn't know it...
John and I are going back and forth.
Yeah, if he doesn't know it, forget it. You're not going to find it out from any place else. John is a terrific techie and a great guy. And of course, Bob. Bob's got a powerful voice. Bob's a great broadcaster. And Bob put this whole thing together, so we're all beholden to Bob.
100%. Bob was the one who communicated with me from the beginning, and very grateful for that. And we hit it off right off the bat and talked about the possibilities. He brought me aboard, you know, on a nightly show, and then we talked about moving into a regular basis. So everyone has been fantastic, from Gene and Susan, the ninja, you know, the ninja news ninjas, the bloggers, they say, the bloggers, and Agnes, and... Everyone has been terrific.
All right. Well, let's talk about something private here. The rest of you don't hear this, okay?
Okay. Go away from the internet radio and let's just Guy and I are talking.
Listen, Jeff, I got $1.5 million on my contract with Head On Radio. What did you get?
Ooh-hoo. I figured you were high. I didn't know you were that high.
Well, yeah, that's what I asked. What I asked for.
He told me unlimited Milky Way. They offered me a redhead, but I already have a redhead.
Okay.
So I said, now, trust me, one is enough. It's hard to handle. And he said he would put a view on the studio window overlooking the Superstition Mountains. I took that and possibly a raise in a couple of months. So I guess I did pretty well as a newcomer.
Oh, I guess you did. I don't have any of those benefits. And just for the benefit of our listening audience, I think we've got the highest qualified group of guys on talk radio on a network, and without any question, the lowest paid.
Well, I think it's stunning because I told Bob this in several conversations. He knows this. I'm not saying anything that you don't know, or Mark doesn't know, or John doesn't know, or myself, or Bob, or Agnes, and even the listening audience doesn't know. This is a great combination of people that's forming slowly to form a very tight lineup on this station. We're all Democrats in the sense we all, like you said with Mark earlier, but we have different perspectives on how we bring it across. But it's starting to form a solid network, and if we can get the word out, you know, like an iTunes listing and an MSN listing, which I know Bob's working on, and we really get people coming here, this will explode in critical mass, and it'll be, you know, bigger than anybody's imagined.
Well, it will, and you know, we're ahead of the curve so far, and I guess we all realize that we're the I like to say the Studebaker Avante of radio. They brought that car out. I'm dating myself, but they brought that car out a long time ago, and it was way ahead of its time. And we're ahead of our time, but we plan to stay on through till our time. A lot of the rest of the guys, you and the rest of them, are young enough that you know, I, on the other hand, I believe I'm the one longest in the tooth of the whole group. I can't.
Oh yes, yes. You're falling apart as we speak, guy.
you don't know
you're not that old.
You don't know how prophetic that is. I didn't say pathetic. I said prophetic. It's both, really.
You know, the beauty, guy, of radio, is, as you well know, is it's ageless. It doesn't matter what age you are being on the radio. You don't have to prep for television show. You don't have to, you know, be in a suit and tie or good looking clothing when you're doing, unless you have a webcast going. And you could just be yourself, be a personality on the air, and this voiceless thing coming over the internet waves.
Hmm. Now I'm being told we can only get one call at a time in here today. I thought I had this phone problem settled, but I guess not. Well, we'll work on it. Something to do after work today.
I have a question. question for you.
Yeah.
You were talking earlier with Mark about the you were going down the list of all the different talk shows,
mm-hmm.
which was very intriguing about, you know, Mark's opinion on that. And I'm curious about the other side of the aisle, our side of the aisle. You mentioned who you listen to in show prep as far as, like, Rush to hear the talking points, et cetera. Who do you listen to on our side of the aisle that you appreciate and admire in talk radio? Because we don't need to give the other side of the aisle any more publicity than they need. We know who they are. We know they're idiots. We know some of them are great performers like Limbaugh, but, you know, just make up these phrases and words to get the public, you know, fired up. But who do you like on our side, on the Democratic side, as far as a progressive talker?
Well, that's a tough one. I often listen to Bob's show. I listened to your show, what was it, Monday? Anyway, the first time this week that I've got a chance to hear it, I hear Mark once in a while. I dearly love Bill Press. Bill Press is just terrific. Had a chance to visit with him quite a bit last week in D.C. Who else? I'm not an Ed Schultz fan at all. Frankly, I mean, as my listeners know, if I'm thinking it, I'll say it. I don't like the guy. Let's see who else here. Randy.
I'm hoping more people are like you, because my time slot basically competes, if we have to talk about competition and internet. You know, archives makes it better that you could be listening to it all hours, but I compete now with Tom Hartman, Al Franken, and Ed Schultz. Soon Al Franken will be off the air, so I just have to worry about more people disliking Ed Schultz like you do, so I can get a little bit of the audience in my time slot.
Well, he's, you know, as long as I'm being honest, I mean, I open my mouth and get myself in trouble all the time, but I just personally don't like the guy. I've met him several times. I don't like him. He doesn't like me. He doesn't like anybody, I don't think. Randy's a little coarse for me. I mean, she's very well informed, got a steel trap mind, and just like Mark, she'd be the last person in the world I'd want to get into a political argument with. She's sharp.
Bulldog. But by the way, you know, there's one person we should mention, because he's going to be coming before my show, is Joe Vecchio, show in the morning. And that, I think that's great for Joe, because now he'll be heard 5 days a week instead of the sporadic time that he was heard, and he'll have a perfect time slot in the morning and a laid-back show that he is, that every man personality that I say. That I was telling him he's the Jimmy Stewart and Tom Hanks of talk radio, where he can relate to the common person. He's not a professional broadcaster in the sense of background like you and me and Bob. He's not an intellectual I can't even think of who, but someone who has the background, you know, the Washington knowledge, but he is that laid-back personality that's perfect for the listening audience. So Joe Vecchio coming on 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. Monday through Friday.
That'll be good. Now, when does that start, next week?
I believe Joe said it starts Monday.
Okay.
And it'll be 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, Monday through Friday.
Well, we're doing a lot of promotion of the Horn today, and that's basically what this day was all about. Wanted to talk about the other shows and the other personalities, and you know, I want to get together with Bob. Bob, as everybody knows, is having a very tough time right now, family wise.
Yes,
and
I do.
And our
yes,
thoughts and prayers are most certainly with him. And I don't know, Bob's really a terrific guy, but here we are patting everybody on each other on the back, but we do want to promote each other, and that's kind of what this show was about today, and we'll do a lot more of this. We're stronger, you know, all for one and one for all, three musky steers and all that sort of thing.
Depends who's Porthos and who's D'Artagnan. I just want to make sure.
Yeah. You know, as we were talking, you're talking about other hosts, you know, Randy, I did talk to her last, what was it, Monday? Or no, Tuesday. And she knows it. We often talk about her. I don't often talk about her, but she takes calls, and a caller hardly ever gets a word out of their mouth. And that's the one thing about Randy is a little different. When I get a caller, I like to find out why they called and let them get it off their chest. And Randy seldom does. So here I've criticized everybody now.
You're like me in that sense. I've always felt that I used to use a phrase when I was doing morning drive that I talked with people and not ask them. And it was a corny little phrase, but I really believe it. I don't think you use your callers like a Howard Stern does, which is a different genre of talk radio, to just enhance your show. I really believe the callers and the listeners are why I'm doing the show. If not, like I told you, I'd be a sock puppet in my studio 19 talking to myself. And that's not cool because I don't want to hear myself for 3 hours. So I do appreciate when we had calls, when we have phone lines starting up, that we get to find out why they're calling, not just making me look good. I want to hear what's on their mind. And I think we're on the same wavelength on that. I think that's better radio, I really believe.
Oh, I think so, too. And that's the one big gripe I have with some of the right-wingers. If you've got an opinion other than theirs, why is usually you don't get past the screeners. Now, my screener here, everybody gets past the screener here. Mean everybody. we don't pay our screener very much, so we in fact today we wouldn't need one with this phone problem. I understand that.
It was an easy screen thing today,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, go ahead.
Now, I wanted to touch something, if I may. I want to revisit something you talked about a little while back with Mark about the impeachment situation. We've been covering it a lot on my show, and again, myself, because I don't have the phone lines like you guys do. But I've been talking about that attitude out there in America is, you know, a lot of people are frustrated, as you well know and as Mark knows, that they want to have the impeachment, but like you said, there's that fine line where we don't want to look like we're being vindictive, but yet we don't want someone to get away with the garbage that George Bush has gotten away with. And I think you raised a perfect point about that behind the scenes the Democrats are talking about this, but it needs to be a groundswell from the Republican side. And what I brought up on my show, it also needs to be a groundswell by the people I think are most culpable in this is the journalists. I think the journalists are slowly starting to now question the administration in a press conference, the White House briefings, where you see now the English journalists about 3 weeks ago where they went at Bush very strong. He wouldn't answer the question. And they said, well, excuse me, he didn't answer the question. And he got a little annoyed. I think if more journalists do that, with due respect to the presidency, but ask the tough questions like a Ted Koppel used to do, I think then the average American person sees it on TV and radio and hears it on radio, and they start getting upset and understanding what's going on, and they have a voice for what they feel. And then the Democrats can come in with the help of the Republicans and say, you know what? Look what everybody's talking about, impeachment, instead of them being the forefront of the impeachment issue.
Oh, absolutely. And how many times have you watched an interview? It's so frustrating, especially doing what I do and what you do and all the rest of the guys here in our group. It's so frustrating to watch a Tim Russert or somebody. And like I said yesterday, I think I wonder how Tim Russert feels knowing that we all know that he's Vice President Cheney's bitch now. And
that's
he is.
The official title. He has a T-shirt with that, doesn't he?
And he is. I hate it when I watch the interviews on TV. I mean, I understand these guys have to protect their jobs, but they'll ask once, and they'll try and ask twice, and when the politician, you know, is not given an answer, they'll let it go. And that makes me so doggone angry. Maybe I'd never get to interview him again, but I don't think I could allow that. I'd probably if I was Russert, I'd been fired a long time ago, but why can't they press these people like the English do? You're right.
What I'd like to see, and this is naive, and I know the listeners who are hearing me for the first time on your show saying, this guy's a nutcake, but I truly believe this to some extent. I'd like to see a White House briefing where they're asking the questions of the president or any politician in any interview briefing where Joe stands up, let's say, for lack of a better name, asks the question on Iraq, whatever, fill in the blank. He avoids it, goes to the next person, and that person stands up and says, excuse me, you didn't answer my fellow journalist question, Joe, and before I ask my question, please answer his. And if he dismisses that person, they all band together as a solid journalistic core and say, please answer the question. But they're like these little chickens without their heads. They're very afraid, like you said, to lose their credentials. They'll be stuck in the back like poor Helen Thomas, who just has now been treated like nothing over the years, which used to be the forefront, at least everyone respected her. And it's all a matter of perception, and they don't follow up with that tough follow-through, like you said, and say, hey, wait a minute, answer the question, no sound bites.
You're right, and that's one big difference between our press and the English press. They just will not let them get away with that. They I think Americans watching a British interview with Tony Blair with one of their press people. Oh, it gets rough. It gets a lot rougher than it does over here.
Well, I think what was funny, if you go back to the Clinton years with the Monica Lewinsky story, as I'm sure you have, you've looked at the world press instead of the local national press. And, of course, most people, maybe not, but the average American doesn't know this. They look at, you know, France, Italy, Germany, their papers, and a lot of them are writing about Bill, Clinton having an affair, and they go, and so?
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
what has that got to do with anything in the price of beans, so to speak, in politics?
I know. I remember Jacques Chirac. I'll never forget that. That's one of the funniest interviews I've ever seen. The interview with Jacques Chirac, and he said he had sex with a woman. I thought you meant it maybe was with a chicken or something. With a woman. That's
right,
it.
Something bizarre.
Yeah.
Well, I like they used to say on Saturday Night Live, you know, I'm cleaning it up here. They said at least we know he's doing it to someone else of the opposite sex instead of doing it to the country like some of the presidents do. And I just, you know, it's no big deal, some of these issues, to the outside eyes. But our society with the journalists the way they are now, it's just gone far afield. There's no accountability anymore. Journalists have totally lost what they're supposed to be doing. They're supposed to be reporting the news, as we know, well know. They're not supposed to be making the news, and they're not supposed to be avoiding the news. And I think that's what happens with them, and that's what gets me frustrated like you, yelling at my TV screen.
Oh, yeah, I've said some pretty nasty things to it lately. I really have. Hey, we're going to pause for a break. Hang around if you want to. I'll be right back.
I will. Thank you very much.
You're listening to The Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network, and we're going to take a little break, and we'll be back in about 2 minutes, so don't you dare go anywhere. I'm watching, you know.
This is Cindy Sheehan. George Bush, Dick Cheney, and others launched a war that took my son's life. Strong evidence suggests that in promoting the war, they lied to Congress and the American people, and that in conducting the war, they have targeted civilians, hospitals, and journalists, used illegal weapons, imprisoned without charge, tortured and spied on Americans without court approval. When Richard Nixon abused power, Congress held a serious bipartisan investigation that resulted in articles of impeachment. Ask your Congress member to begin impeachment proceedings against George Bush and Dick Cheney.
Sponsored by AfterDowningStreet.org.
Dear Mr. President, come take a walk with me.
Come take a walk with me.
Let's pretend we're just two people and you're not better than me. I'd like to ask you some questions if we can speak honestly. What do you feel when you see all the homeless on the street? Who do you pray for at night before you go to sleep? What do you feel when you look in the mirror? Are you proud? How do you sleep while the rest of us cry?
Ah, yes, dear Mr. President. I've got a lot of things I'd like to tell Mr. President. I know a lot of you have a lot of things you'd like to tell Mr. President as well. I wouldn't exactly be singing him a song, though. No song that I know. My God, it would be good to sit down with him, wouldn't it? Oh, yes. We have as our guest right now Jeff Allen Wolf. Jeff is the new guy in the block. He doesn't get the front row in the parking lot of Head On Radio Network Studios. He has to park in the back there because he's the new guy. Jeff, welcome.
Wait, they told me that the backside is more secluded and it's a specialized area for me to park.
Okay.
You mean they were lying about that too?
No, we never lie on this program.
Stop! I want to talk to you about my contract. Okay, I get it covered. You know, at least you're more respectful than I am calling him Mr. President. I very rarely call him President of my show.
I usually call him Junior Bush.
I will only call him President when I'm reading something where it says the word President, but I just say George or Georgie Boy or George Bush. My hat's off to you for being able to do that with a straight face and not turning your stomach when you say that.
Well, you haven't seen the antacids I got sitting next to me here, so don't go too far with it. We had.
I heard about doing this type of format, and I started stocking up on a pile of them from Walgreens, so I'm well aware.
We had Dr. Justin Frank on our program a few months back, and He's a psychiatrist there in Washington, and I can't think of the Bush's brain. I think is no, that wasn't the name of it. That was Carl, the book about Carl Rove. Anyway, he wrote a book about Bush's brain, and I tell you what, it actually frightened me to listen. The reason I brought him up is I see he's got another article out now about Bush, and I don't think I'm the only, I think a lot of people agree. I don't think the guy's got all of his marbles right now. I really don't. I hate to say that about the guy in the Oval Office, but there are things that he has said and done lately that leave me a little queasy as far as his sanity is concerned.
You think?
Yeah.
You even think he knows what marbles are?
I was surprised, very surprised, last week in D.C. for the conference I went to. I did get to talk to a lot of Democratic politicians, and they tell me that that aspect of it is quietly going around the halls of Congress. Is this guy okay? Does he have it together? And, man, that's frightening when you consider the power in that office.
It took them how long now, 6 years to figure this out, and many years before he was the president to figure this out? This is scary if this is a long-term diagnosis of this group of people who are not medical professionals to kind of get a clue there's something going on with George upstairs.
Oh, and you want to start screaming at him when it comes to that point, even though they're the Democrats. Last week, you know, they gave us that malarkey about, well, you know, yeah, we voted for the war, but, you know, the intelligence was bad, and if you knew what we heard at the time. No, wait a minute. Wait just a damn minute. I did know what you knew. I had people on his show. I had Scott Ritter. I had Muhammad Al-Baradei. I had the people that really knew the situation on the show saying, hell no, there's no WMDs. And so we knew more than they did, evidently. And, you know, Mark and I alluded to that fact that many times we do know more than they do.
I think we do, and I think we take the time to find out more. It's not just we know more. We do our due diligence to look and dig and research and not just take the garbage that's handed to us by the easy sources, like I tell my listeners, the CNNs, the Fox, the MSNBCs, the typical news sources that are going to be, like you said, to mark the talking points. And I want to include myself in the group when you said you and Mark. I do not do talking points. I try to not say the same thing that everyone says on all the talk shows. I may use a catchphrase here and there, but it sticks and it works. And I'm glad, like the Bush crime family I'll use, was it's about time we have something to go against the liberal, the L word that they've used over the years. But we do know more. We do find out more. We don't accept what's handed to us.
I was shocked when I had a chance to, and I hate to keep talking to it, but about it, but some of the things that I heard last week really bothered me. I was shocked when I asked, there was, what, three, four senators in the room at the time, asked him about these production and sharing agreements with the Iraqi parliament, and none of them knew anything about it. And, you know, I said, well, slap my ass and call me Judy. I couldn't believe it. I'm talking to United States senators about something so important.
Yeah. Oblivious.
Didn't know. Honestly, didn't know about it.
They didn't care. You know, what's scary? That they were oblivious that it was available or didn't care. You know, that it wasn't important enough to find out about.
And that's
scary.
I at least hope they went back and asked one of their staffers about it. You know, it is a little bit important.
Let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Who do you, because we're talking about accountability, we're talking about Democrats who should, you know, you want to scream at them and want to be aware of stuff. Obviously, the 08 election's coming up, you know, starting gun was a couple of weeks ago, a month ago, whatever, started a year ago, as far as I'm concerned. Because we need something different right now in America, you know, that altruistic rose-colored glasses view of a lot of people are pissed off. Not if the Republicans are also somewhat pissed off of the Democrats. I get a lot of my listeners to say, I'm not a label, I'm not a Democrat, I'm an independent. And not in the independent way that they were doing the movement, but literally, they think both sides are corrupt. Not that, you know, we're not sure, but we think everyone's lying. Who do we have out there that you see the closest to any candidates that are running? And if not running now, who should run that comes closest to maybe invigorating the United States and the citizenship, et cetera, as far as a candidate for the Democratic nomination?
Well, there you go.
Opening up a can of worms.
Yes, you are. If this was a wise country and everybody was politically involved in politically,
well, you just killed that subject.
Yeah, didn't
right
I
there.
Though? And astute on politics, and really examined closely all of the politicians, their backgrounds, what they really stand for, what they know about the issues and so forth. And people laugh at me when I say this because a lot of people don't agree. And if there was it would be Dennis Kucinich.
Okay.
Dennis Kucinich is probably a great candidate for the presidency, but he's not electable. Definitely not electable. So my dream ticket for this time around, as vice president, I want Bill Richardson. And I think he brings in something fresh. I think he brings in a wealth of talent and experience. And I think, and a lot of people don't agree, and of course we're Democrats, so we're going to slug this out until we all have bloody noses. I think Al Gore learned his lesson. I think Al Gore has matured. I think he knows why he lost that election, because he wasn't the real Al Gore. And I think the real Al Gore could step up and win this election with Bill Richardson as his side. And you talk about a talented and experienced group right there. There they are.
Interesting perception on Al Gore, because I too feel that he stayed in the background. Let's face it, emotionally people cannot realize what he had gone through. That was a public viewing of, in your heart, you know you won. You know by all legal rights you won. You took it as far as you can legally and graciously backed out and said, okay, fine, the final decision was against this, the recount. I'll back away. Grew the beard, went into the background, started teaching down the road later on, did this movie, The Inconvenient Truth, and I think slowly he's regenerating or rejuvenating his nerve endings, because I think it is a major, it's almost like a catharsis of going through years of therapy with a bad divorce. I think really that's what it has to be in my mind, close to what he went through. And it doesn't even touch the level of pain and emotional, angst that he went through with his family and him going through this situation. But yeah, I think he's positioned right that depending on what plays out in the next couple of months, the year, that he's starting to get that feedback of people looking at him in a nice viewpoint and seeing that he is a warmer, down-to-earth guy. He did have a lot of intelligence. He did have Washington inside knowledge because he was in the Clinton administration, etc. He knew what was going on, and he has some ideas that are worth listening to. So I think it's going to be interesting to see it play out in the next 6 months.
When Al ran, everybody knows, and I don't like to talk about it over and over again, but anyway, my cousin was the treasurer of the United States during the Clinton administration, Mary Ellen Withrow, and she and her husband Norm and Tipper and Al were good friends. They did some running around together and all that. And about a month into Al's campaign, Mary Ellen called me one day and said, "I got to tell you, I don't know who this man is that's running for president." I said, "What are you talking about, Mary Ellen?" She said, "I don't know him. This is not the real Al Gore. His advisors have tried to mold and shape him into something else, and evidently he's taken their advice. This is not the real guy." So if the public ever sees the real guy, they will fall in love with him. But they haven't. So we shall see.
It was like a facade almost, not to revisit. But to me, the thing that stood out was the debates with him and George Bush, where you had this preconceived understanding that, oh, Al Gore is the master debater, and he knows that he's going to wipe the floor with Bush. And then that key moment when he walked up to Bush and stood 2 feet from him, looking at him, he looked like a 10-year-old not knowing what the hell to do and trying to do something that's not his personality or his facade, is the easiest phrase I can come up with. It was a turnoff. And she's absolutely right. I don't know the real person, but we're starting to see it slowly in all the little stories that are coming out and his speeches that he makes and his laid-back quality, his low-key quality. But maybe that's what we need. We need someone just speaking from the heart and not trying to be a politician for a change.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I look at this whole group. I think we've got a good group to choose from. There are some other people that I'd like to see have their hats in. The Republicans, I'm also buoyed by their group because I think it's a pathetic group. And I've heard all the powers that be on the right. I even heard Limbaugh the other day say that there isn't any of them that lights his fire. And that's big. That's very big. And I don't understand. What's the funny thing to me is if Giuliani should get it, how are they going to explain that? How in the world could they explain their Republican family values with Rudy Giuliani running as president? They can't.
Well, beside that, besides the obvious tie-ins to that as far as being more liberal than not what they're used to, I've been bringing up on my show things that disturbed me about his business ties since 9-1-1.
Oh, yeah.
All the things I think he took advantage of to make him look like an image that wasn't there. Everyone thinks this man is this godsend. So did I when I watched, you know, the tragedy on TV. Oh, Mayor Giuliani, good for you. He's a Republican, but he stood up in a time of tragedy in the morning.
What did he do that you wouldn't have done?
Well, exactly. But you've read the articles like I have about some of the books that have come out, some of the articles that have come out about his commission. I forget the name of the commission, but it's this crisis commission that goes around the world. And they're now respected in about fires and about business management just because of 9-1-1. And he's made millions of dollars off of this and has got a respect rating that's gone through the roof only because people died in New York.
Yeah, and then he gives us Bernie, pushes Bernie to be head of Homeland Security, and he was about as dirty and corrupt as anybody could possibly get.
Exactly.
I don't know. I've spent time trying to figure out what in the world it was that Mayor Giuliani did in New York that was any different than any other mayor of any other city in the United States wouldn't have done. Fine. I mean, yes, he went to funerals. He got out and talked to, you know, he did all that. But wouldn't everybody have done that?
He was personable. You got to give him that. Yeah. He's articulate. He sees the moment. But, again, when a crisis is going on and how it was spun and how it played out, and now we have hindsight, the armchair quarterback years later, we look and go, Emperor has no clothes.
Yeah.
Anybody speaking up about this guy? This guy is phonier than a $12 bill. I'll make up something here. But a phony person here.
And I'll at least give him credit that he handled it better than Junior would have if he'd have been the mayor. I'll give him that.
Well, we saw how Junior handled it when he was told.
Yeah. So. Yeah,
you know, let me go on reading and just not have any reaction. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong about this guy, and everyone's saying I'm nitpicking on stuff like this. But when he was told about the event 9-1-1, the tragedy, I understand you don't panic and go, oh my God, people are dying in New York. You know, you're in front reading to kids, but you don't sit there for what was it, 30-40 minutes and continue on.
No,
you say something. Say, excuse me, I'm wanted in the White House. As everyone would know, the president has emergencies and he thinks that he's leader of the free world.
Hey, kids, as I just explained to you, I'm the president, and I've got important business to do, and I'm being called right now. Instead, he stood there with, you know, looking in one ear. You can look through one ear and right out the other. There was nothing going on in there.
There's a lot of theories. We know that. We've heard all the theories about 9-1-1. We don't know what he was thinking, but we know it certainly wasn't a reaction of showing any concern or care, it seemed like.
Right, you are. Jeff, your program's on again from 11 to 1, Monday through Friday.
That is correct.
I want to keep reminding everybody that. Monday through Friday, 11 to 1.
11
Jeff Allen Wolf.
1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
And are you into, have you started doing any guests or anything like that yet?
We are not set up yet with the phone lines here. We're looking at a hybrid box for the studio broadcast host or something, or maybe even a Vonage thing. We're working on that. I think right now we're just getting settled in on the time slot. In fact, I was actually going to have a show prepped for today for tomorrow, which because we're on a delay because of when I do the show until we actually stream live, that we'll probably just rerun the show tomorrow because of the time frame and also the weather sucks here. So it looks like thunderstorms in Arizona, which is unusual. But hopefully we will get guests because I do enjoy that, and I think that lends itself to a talk show very well, and besides just sitting and talking to people.
Have you lived there a long time?
We are going on a year and 4 months.
That's about exactly how long my brothers lived there. So you've been through the 115-degree summer weather. And
we actually showed up July 14th, and it was 118, a record temperature, and I was unloading the U-Haul that we were carrying behind us cross-country, and I was flat on my ass in the middle of 12 noon, 1 o'clock, and my girlfriend says, are you okay? Get me water now. I think I'm dying. And we came from Florida, so, you know, I should be used, but it's totally different. But we've acclimated. We're happy. It's gorgeous. You don't reinvent yourself in your 40s and move cross country with two cats, a girlfriend, a car, and your stuff. You do it when you're younger or when you retire, but not in the heart of life. So it's been an experience. We're settling in and we're having fun, and we're looking forward to it.
Well, enjoy it. I'm glad you're there. That way I'll be able to stop and visit when I head out that way and visit family. Jeff, thanks so much.
I'd love to sit down with you. Thank you, Guy. I appreciate it very much, and have a great rest of the show.
Thanks. Good to talk
Thanks
to you.
Thanks a lot, Guy. Bye-bye.
We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. Don't go away.
One, two, three, four. When I I was a little boy, way back home in Liverpool. My mama told me I was great. Then when I was a teenager, I knew that I got something going. My mama told me I was great. And now I'm a man. I took a woman by the hand, and she told me I was great. Yeah, I was the greatest show on earth, for what it was worth. Yeah, now she's 32, and all she wants to do is boogaloo. Hey! Yeah, I look at myself in the mirror, I see my wife and kids, they tell me I was great. Yeah, my name is Billy Shears. For all those years. Yeah, and she's only 32. And all she wants to do is boogaloo. Hey! Was great.
Okay, back at it. We've got about 10 minutes left in the program. About 9.5 minutes till the end of the show. Don't know where the time went today. I really don't. Anyway, we're back. You give us a call, 866-546-5254. I guess we don't have any lines open right now, but we have somebody on the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, Guy. This is George from Denver.
Hi, George.
I wanted to let you know that I support Jane Fonda, and I was really happy she was there, and...
And why were you happy she in particular was there?
Well, you know, back a long time ago, she stood up for us, and she tried to do what she thought was right, and it turned out she made a mistake. But you know what? She was fighting for us. She was fighting to get these criminals to quit killing for these criminals that we have running the show right now.
I agree with a lot of that. But was she right in going to Hanoi and sitting on the anti-aircraft gun with one of the North Vietnamese helmets on and all that?
Well, her heart was in the right place.
Well, if it was, don't you think? And don't get me wrong, I like Jane Fonda. I do. I always have, and I think it was a mistake, and she apologized for it. But don't you think they're going to beat us over the head with that now? I mean, knowing that they've got an 87-13% lead on radio. And on the press, that they're just going to kill us with that. Every time that always comes out, Hanoi Jane.
But you know what? It doesn't matter.
It does matter to the rest of the people. It may not matter to you, and it may not matter to me, but what about the people over there that might be sitting on the middle and go, oh, that Jane Fonda's with them?
They're going to beat us over the head no matter what. They own the media lock, stock, and barrel. you know, I talked to you a long time ago. I believe our country was totally taken over in 1963, November. That LBJ and George H. Bush conspired to kill Kennedy, and they did it. And they took our country over, and they run this thing. They run this country totally.
Well, I don't necessarily agree with that, but I just if I were Jane Fonda, I wouldn't have gone up on that stage for the good of the movement. I wouldn't have gone up there, and I think she should have known that. And I just think we've lost by having her up there. We've lost some people,
I was glad to see her up there. And another thing, you're for term limits, and to me, these criminals, they've stolen trillions of dollars from our government. They can afford to put a criminal in every other day. They have tons of money. They can put a criminal in all the time. And when one of our good guys finally makes it in there, this is what they want. They want term limits. So to me, term limits is voting. You go vote them out. But we don't have voting. It's all rigged.
Well, I don't happen to agree on all that. I know there's been some things go wrong, things are not right, but I don't think there's any vast conspiracy to. I just don't. I'm not a good conspiracy person at all. Hey, thanks for your call.
Okay.
Good to hear from you.
Bye, guy.
Well, that's one good thing about the show. We don't always have to agree. We don't have to agree all the time at all. That's right, and we don't necessarily. Somebody's saying that's nonsense. I don't know what. Evidently, the Jane Fonda thing has got people jacked up. I'll tell you again. I would not have Jane Fonda at any political event for the liberal progressive movement. Never. And it's not that I don't like her. It's not that at all. And that's not a gutless way to take it. She should know that she is not a positive for this movement. She is a negative. She should know that. It doesn't matter what you think of her. Doesn't matter what we think of her. It's what the people in the middle think. And let's be right here. The people we fight over in these elections are the middle people. They're the ones that are electing the presidents right now. The middle people. So you're passionate. I'm passionate. The people on the far right are passionate. And the middle people, they don't give a damn. And she is a definite negative, a hardcore big negative for any movement on the left. And that's you check it out. You just find out how positive Jane Fonda is. Take a poll. Doesn't make any difference what you think of her and what I think of her. You just find out how well thought of she is in this United States. And I'll tell her. I'll tell you this right now. Her ratings are probably lower than George Bush's. That's why I didn't think she should be there at all. Let's go with the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Yeah, this is Sarge.
Hi, Sarge.
Listen, on Jane Fonda, let me throw this out at you and see how you think on this. You know, the right keeps reinventing. They're idiots like Newt Gingrich and Dan Quayle and all these. They screw up over and over, and they keep bringing them back, and they reinvent them, and they make them something great. On our side, if someone makes one bad move, like Kerry botches the joke, Jane Fonda.
You're right, Sarge. I agree with you on that.
We can't do that, man. We're killing
our bosses. I agree with you on that. I agree that we can't, but we're not bringing her back.
I think we should.
You will never. You will. I'm on this one, Jane Fonda. You will never. Fix
way,
her
the
image.
Ratings aren't Lord and Bush's either.
Well, I don't know what they are.
That's wrong there. I can tell you that.
But she will never, ever be respected by the broad scope of the people in this country. Never.
Well, you know, the thing about it is.
And why do we want damn actors up on there anyway? That's the whole part that pisses me off. I don't want a damn actor up on the stage talking for me. I think it's ridiculous.
Well, you know, everybody. And this is something that you said, and you and I are totally in agreement. Everybody has a right to their voice, and we need to get a very wide spectrum of people speaking, and not just actors and actresses and all these.
I would rather just have real people up there speaking. I don't really give a damn what any actor says. I don't give a damn what Jane Fonda says. I don't care about any actors, period. I've got a thing about actors. and politics. And
I just wanted to call and throw that 2 cents.
Okay, Sarge.
See how you,
I appreciate
how you
like it. I do
Thank
appreciate
you,
it. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
You know, we just get beat over the head with Hollywood all the time. We get beat over the head with Hanoi Jane all the time. And I think both of those segments of society, I just ought to understand that they're not helping us. That's all there is to it. I've got nothing against Jane Fonda. Nothing at all. But you will never get her image rehabilitated in the United States. You go into any VFW club in the United States and mention Jane Fonda's name, and they'll throw your ass out the front door. And I know that for a fact. I mean, I haven't been in all of them, but any of them I've ever been in and any of the vet groups that I've ever been in, they hate her. And I don't think they ought to, but they do. That's my point. Well, anyway, we're down at the end of a show. I don't know where the time went today. I really don't. One of those days where it just went so fast. Sorry about the phone line. We're going to get in trouble with Vonnie or get... in touch with Vonage after the show here today and find out what the heck is going on. You never know with those folks. And it'll be a long process. That's the one good thing. The bad thing about Vonage, when it works great, but when you've got trouble, oh my God. Anyway. Hey, thanks for listening today. Glad to have you along. Glad to know we don't disagree on everything, that we don't agree on everything. That's boring. And good to know that you're passionate about the issue of Jane Fonda, and I'm passionate about it as well. We'll agree to disagree on that subject. We don't disagree all that much. Anyway, thanks for being with us today. Thanks to Mark Levine. Thanks for Jeff Allen Wolf. Glad to have them with us today. You'll be hearing a lot more from them. And in the meantime, you've been listening to The Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network. You've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. See you later, gang.